Welcome to the Dental Sales Podcast with your hosts, Joe McGonigal and Doug Young of SCC Partners.
Welcome back to the Dental Sales Podcast. This is Joe McGonigal, and today you are in for a treat. Joining me today is Mike Weinberg. Mike is a consultant, a coach, a speaker, and what I like about Mike is his specialty, which is new business development. He's also the author of the book New Sales Simplified, the essential handbook for prospecting and new business development, which was a number one Amazon bestseller, and Mike is widely considered to be a top sales influencer. Mike, how are you doing today?
Joe, I'm doing great. Good to be with you and talk about sales this morning.
So, Mike, it's always nice when we just talked for, 20 minutes or so before the show starts here, and I always get a good vibe from that, and I think today's going to be a really, really good conversation. Looking forward to what you have to talk about today. But before we do that, why don't you tell people a little bit more about your background and your work and kind of how you got into this new business development focus?
Sure. Real simply, I'm a sales hunter turned consultant and coach. So I was kind of the street fighter sales guy who's now a consultant coach who spends a lot of my days embedded on the front lines with business development organizations and sales teams. And I'm really about one thing, and that's helping increase the effectiveness of sales leaders and sales people, particularly when it comes to acquiring net new business, opening up new doors, new accounts, and acquiring new pieces of business.
I mean, I read your book. I really enjoyed it. In the subtitle, you say it's a handbook. I couldn't agree more. I think this is really a tool that salespeople can use. But it's this whole notion of new business development. And, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Aaron Ross, but he's the former director of sales for Salesforce.com. And the process that he built there helped the company reach their first $100 million in sales. He has a book called Predictable Revenue. And here's what he says in the book. Experienced salespeople are terrible at prospecting. Experienced salespeople hate to prospect. Even if a salesperson does do some prospecting successfully, as soon as they generate some pipeline, they become too busy to prospect. It's not sustainable. Now, you don't go quite that far in your book, but you do list 16 reasons that salespeople fail at new business development. What are some of the most common you see?
Yeah, wow. Well, I say there's a lot of truth in what you just shared. I may not go exactly that far, but the reality is that no one defaults to prospecting mode. No one. I mean, I say that every day. There's always something easier, more urgent, or more attractive to do. And my favorite part of what I do is working with individuals and teams and watching them. And I steal all kinds of best practices and share them with my clients. But I also see a ton of failure. And I see good people, good salespeople that fail to pick up new business. And there's a whole lot of reasons. And I do list them in great detail in that chapter in the book. The ones I would say are most common, and this is going to sound really, I don't even know what the word is, almost awkward. The truth is, a lot of the reason that people fail to get new business today is because they really never had to go out and do it, so they don't know how. That we've got an entire generation of salespeople who the majority of their careers have been during boom economic times. So they've been carried along by the economy or being part of a hot industry or being in a growth company. And as long as there was enough demand and folks coming at them, if they were good relationally or they were, had good product knowledge or were technically competent, they made their numbers. But when things dried up and the tide turned, it got ugly, and it got ugly fast because they just didn't know what to do. So honestly, that's the number one reason. It's not just that they don't want to prospect. It's that when they have to, they really don't know what to do because they haven't had to. There's a whole litany of reasons. I'll share another one with you, the telephone. I see salespeople afraid to pick up the telephone and make a phone call. There's a whole movement today of folks I'll call charlatans that have drank a little too much of that inbound marketing Kool-Aid and the whole sales 2.0 movement. And there's a lot of good teachers and a lot of good theory there, but there's also folks that are telling salespeople that proactive targeting, prospecting doesn't work anymore. We need to do SEO and inbound marketing and permission marketing and blog and tweet and LinkedIn and You know, people are going to do 70% of their sales, you know, process before you get involved as a salesperson. So don't bother calling someone that's not calling you. Well, number one, not only is that a lie, that that's not the truth, it's dangerous because it's exactly the thing that the underperforming, reactive, passive salesperson wants to hear. You know, don't cold call because it doesn't work. Well, that's like, you know, music to the ears of the underperformer. And I'll highlight one more topic I'm seeing in a lot of organizations, and it's because of the way things have played out. Some people, Joe, are not really built to hunt. They're not made to prospect. And they may have been in sales for 10, 15, 30 years, but the truth is they're not a hunter and they know it. But because they were in a good situation and were making their numbers or feeding their family, they really didn't have to deal with it. But the truth is when you're out hunting, you faced risk and rejection and conflict, and you have to push past resistance and overcome obstacles. And there are people in sales that are too relational to succeed in a hunting environment. And people look at me like I'm crazy when I say that. Like, you can be too relational in sales. And I'm like, absolutely. If you hate risk and rejection and conflict, and it makes you want to vomit because you don't like upsetting people and you're afraid to ask somebody to make a change, you will not succeed as someone who's got a prospect. So there's a small handful of some real common reasons I'm seeing.
Mike, I don't even know where to dig in to start with those. On one hand, you have the person that doesn't know how to do it, and you say that no one defaults to prospecting mode. You know, it's interesting. It seems like a vicious cycle, really. I don't know how to do it, so I'm going to do whatever I can to avoid doing it, right? So obviously you have to address the skill set there in order to feel competent and somewhat confident to go out and do this. And you mentioned one other thing in the book that I think is worth discussing specifically as it relates to that piece. And it was really the first thing I highlighted when I was reading. And I don't think, I sent this to you in an email, I don't think enough people are talking about it. And it's why I really wanted to discuss it today. But, you know, it's specifically, you talked about how the sales manager has moved away from being a sales mentor. So when I think about this, I'm a rep, I'm struggling. I realize now based on, you know, you talking that, yeah, it's the truth. I really don't know how to prospect. So where do I go for help if my sales manager has evolved away from that mentor role?
Well, that's a great observation. You're probably seeing it like I'm seeing it as well. And I think it's frankly a sin. When I was new in sales, I had mentors. I had older guys, whether it was my dad who was, you know, had a lot of sales experience, or one of the first CEOs I worked for in a very entrepreneurial company, to my first sales manager in a big company. They took it upon themselves to take me under their wing and show me how to sell. You know, where do you get your shoe shined? You know, how do you show up for a meeting? How do you structure a sales conversation? I mean, I got mentored. You know, I give those folks a lot of credit for helping shape me into the salesperson that I became. And I don't see that happening today. I got sales managers whose heads are buried in CRM screens. They've become desk jockeys. And then kind of like what we talked about in the previous segment, we've got folks in sales management roles that don't know how to prospect either because they never had to do it. So they're no use to the salespeople. So yes, it's an issue. What to do about it? I got a couple suggestions. First is really easy. There is so much free information available today. I mean, you look what you're doing right here with a podcast, right? There are some incredible blogs. I mean, I'm connected to an entire community of sales improvement specialists across North America who blog regularly, more than I do, and put out very valuable content. And if someone would commit to spending 5 to 10 minutes a day just reading a few articles on the basics of business development and prospecting, their knowledge and their confidence would grow exponentially. So free blogs, one way. Another way, and this is how I benefit a lot, I've got some peers that I talk to regularly about selling. I've always had friends in different companies in sales or friends on my own company, and we would intentionally get together for lunch or on a phone call and share our situations and coach each other through deals. How are you getting in to see that guy? What are you saying on the phone? How are you handling voicemail? You know, how many times do you call back in a week until you're a pest? And the, I mean, real life situation, get hook up with some other folks that do what you do, whether they're in the same company or a different company or even a different industry for that matter, and share ideas and best practices and sharpen each other. And I know that's countercultural today because we're all taught to be mavericks and cowboys and go it alone. Well, that doesn't make any sense. So go get some help. And then the other way, you know, if you want to spend some money, you know, I mean, even a small amount of money, go buy a book. You know, spend the whopping $12 and go on Amazon and buy my book, and at least you'll see the framework of these are the things you need to do to put together a new business development sales attack. And there's all kinds of folks in coaching and consulting that can certainly help. But there's no reason not to equip yourself. Today, it's easier and less expensive than ever. But having said all that, it still is very hard to make up for the fact that I don't see a lot of managers who take pride in investing in the development of their people. I see a lot of management, but I see very little mentoring going on.
Now that's an interesting statement. You don't see many managers that take pride. I think that word pride is important. So, you know, some really good advice for the salespeople out there, but I'm a manager and I'm listening to you right now, Mike. How do I get my head out of the muck? How do I get away from the CRM screens and the spreadsheets? I mean, this is what you work with organizations on, I think, to an extent. Any advice for the manager?
Yeah, I've got a lot of advice for the manager. In fact, I end up spending more and more time with managers recently because I've learned you can't really fix the organization by coaching the salespeople. The key leverage point in any sales organization is the manager. And, you know, I had a great mentor, another one of my mentors who taught me a lot about leadership, and his expression was really simple. As goes the leader, so goes the organization. And the level of the team rarely exceeds the level of the leader. So I'm spending more and more time with sales managers. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I would give the managers, you've got to take back control of your calendar. The fact that you spend so much time in non-revenue producing activity is perplexing beyond anything I can understand. Just like Brian Tracy, you know, he's got 16,000 books on sales. They all say the same thing and they're all good. And Brian Tracy tells, right? He tells, there's a reason he's been so successful for so long. And one of the things I learned from Brian Tracy was that all day long as a salesperson, we need to ask ourselves, is what I'm doing right now leading to a sale? Can you imagine if a sales guy asked himself that 10 times a day? And how many times during the day would he not be able to say yes? Well, the same applies to the manager. You know, is what I'm doing right now helping my people grow revenue? And unfortunately, it's not. Sales managers spend their time with their firefighting, you know, their fire chief helmet on, and they're putting out customer service issues. And
it feels good to put fires out, Mike.
It sure does, because you feel important and you feel valuable, and it probably needs to be done, but it doesn't often move the needle on revenue growth. So if one, I'm the sales manager, I'm taking back control of my calendar. And two, I'm getting together with my people. I'm running good team meetings and I'm meeting with them one-on-one and I'm asking questions. What kind of help do you need to get more business? And then the last part is that you've got to have a framework yourself as the manager. Do you understand what needs to be done to put together a new business development sales attack? And I offer this incredibly uber simple framework. And it starts out with the list. Your folks need a finite strategic list of targets that they're going after, whether they be existing customers that are growable or they are prospects that we don't yet sell to. And then once we have a list, your people need to be armed with great weapons to fire at those targets. They need a great story. They have to be able to conduct a good sales conversation. They need the right materials, et cetera. And then the last part of the framework is, okay, it's time to execute the attack. Right, we got to put a high frequency focus, you know, fill up our calendar with time spent actually selling. So when you put those three things together, you know, a great target list, good weapons, and then a calendar filled up with new business development activity, good things usually happen. And I wish more sales managers would step back from the busyness and the craze and, you know, having their head buried in Salesforce or whatever their flavor, you know, favorite CRM is, and get out with their people and meet with the team and meet one-on-one and get in the field and watch what's happening so you can decide where your people need development.
So, Mike, let's dig into the target list. You mentioned a number of things there, but target list is something you talk about extensively in your book. And specifically, you offer a client segmentation model that I really like. And, you know, my instinct and my gut tells me that salespeople typically have their clients segmented for them. You know, corporate does it or their CRM does it. And the question I'm curious about is, is that data that the reps are getting, is it meaningful? Is it useful? Is it something I can use to grow my business? And your model's so simple that it provides a great amount of insight. Now, I think ultimately it offers focus. Can you talk about it for a few minutes?
Let me start by answering this. Yeah, sometimes the company does a good job helping us focus, and focus is critical. Clarity and focus are my two non-negotiables for new business development sales success. You got to know what you're selling and to whom and why, and you got to focus on your day job, which is getting new business. But once you get past there, the very first thing you need, and that's why it's step one, I mean, selecting your targets and segmenting your list, it's first for a reason. And the reason I say that, it's really one of our few chances to be strategic. So much of what we do in hunting and new business development is rote, it's mechanical, you do it over and over and over again. The chance you get to think is, who am I going to target? And you know, when you live in reactive mode as a salesperson, you just respond to demand, you don't really need a good list. You just kind of follow along whatever's coming your way. But the moment you decide to be proactive and you're going to hunt for new business, and I mean, and when you talk about segmenting your existing clients, you're hunting within existing customers. You can also be hunting for prospects, which is a whole other conversation. But let's just stick to, you know, those folks that have territories or an existing book of business that they're trying to grow. Yeah, I advocate a very simple model of segmenting. And I basically ask sales folks to divide their existing customers or clients into four categories. And the first three are where we're going to pay our attention. The three categories I care about are, who are your largest customers? Who are your most growable customers? And then which customers are most at risk, you know, where you could potentially lose them. And then the other category is other. And if an account falls into the other category, what that means to me is they deserve very little of your time and attention because it's not worth it. We're not paid to be busy. And Joe, this is the thing I run up against in almost every client I go to where they've got sales folks managing a territory or an existing portfolio of accounts. I see sales folks that kind of do a milk run. You know, they're cruising around on autopilot. They always go the same direction. You know, it's the third Tuesday of the month, so I should be here. You know, it's the third week of the month, I'm going to drive west. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, we're not paid to be busy. We're not paid to drive. We're paid to move the needle on revenue. So what would happen if we got strategic and turned our brains on and said, where should I invest my time? Because I get paid for results, right? And I'm trying to make more money. I need more sales. So who are you going to invest your time and energy in? And I think the smartest place to go is, number one, where are your most growable accounts? Let's over-invest our focus, our mental energy, our creativity in working on accounts where we can grow the business, cross-sell, upsell, penetrate, new offerings, whatever it might be. And then a lot of times when you make those three lists, you know, largest, most growable, and most at risk, you have some customers that are on all three. If you think about it, you've got some really big customers that are still growable because there's all kinds of upside. And yet those are also the ones that are at risk very often because your competition is, you know, chasing them all the time. So that's my model for segmenting. Divide them up. And if they don't make one of those three categories, I would ignore them for the most part. And no one's going to yell at you for not putting enough energy into a meaningless customer. But they're going to applaud you when you start growing the business because you're not doing a milk run, but you're actually putting your time where you can get an ROI.
People are going to think we talked at length about this before we started recording. And the truth is we didn't. I certainly mentioned that I wanted you to talk about segmentation, but the words milk run are used so prominently in the dental industry because the average territory rep is on a routine call cycle that is somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks. So your every third Tuesday analogy, I've got to be here, is great. I really liked I should drive west. But that is the standard operating procedure in the dental industry for many, if not most, of the reps listening to this. It's Monday. It's 10 o'clock. I know exactly where I should be. And there's one client that's expecting me right now. Whether they're growable, whether they're a big opportunity for me, whether it's where I should be is not relevant. This is what the schedule says, so this is where I'm going to go. And that's a big reason that I wanted you to dig into this model. The real opportunity for growth in the dental industry specifically is for the reps that can look at where their opportunities really are and ask yourself, am I spending time with the right clients? Am I spending time in the right practices? Am I talking to the right dentist? So,
Joe, I applaud you saying that. And I know very little about the dental industry, and I love that we connected on that. I would love for you to write for me and put something out on my site to folks to hear what you're saying, because what you're saying is true in the dental world is true everywhere I go where there's a territory. I've got a few current clients right now where I'm doing some consulting, and they're national sales organizations, but they're very lean. They have, you know, like a dozen people covering the whole country. So imagine how large those geographies are. And these guys are running themselves ragged, trying to cover all their accounts. And I'm like, stop it. Stop it. We're not paying you to burn gasoline. We are paying you to sell more. Where can you spend your time that you're going to drive revenue increases? Turn your brain on. You are, and I'm no insult to the Frito-Lay guy. I love my Fritos. But you're not the potato chip dude. You do not run a route. You're not driving a truck stocking shelves, protecting shelf space. You've got to turn on your brain and get strategic. That's how you move the needle.
I really appreciate you amplifying this point, because I'm an industry insider. So when I say it, sometimes it's, we've heard that a bunch of times. So I think it's real nice to have someone like you, an outsider, come in and really echo what a lot of us inside the industry have been suggesting reps do. But Mike, before we run out of time, let's assume now I'm a sales rep. I can now walk away from this podcast and I decided, listen, I'm going to get my prospecting ducks in a row. These guys are right. New business development's important. And yes, I've been avoiding it. I've been shying away from it. I'm going to find myself a mentor, whether that's my manager or somebody else or free resources on the internet or books. I'm going to start developing my skills. And I'm going to segment my clients so it's a more useful framework that I can use to identify opportunities. There's one thing we haven't addressed. What's the story that I, as the salesperson, am going to tell when I'm out prospecting or cold calling? And story is something that you cover extensively in your book. And it's the piece that I've really dug into and taken that handbook word and used it to redevelop how I tell my own story at SCC Partners. So could you talk, I know we don't have enough time to cover the whole thing, but talk a little bit about story, where reps get it wrong, and just some things to think about as you start to rebuild that story.
Yeah, I love this topic. It's probably the most popular chapter in my book and the most commented on is helping folks sharpen and strengthen their sales story. So when you ask me, where do they get it wrong? That's pretty simple. I hear sales folks and companies, you know, tell their story and try to, you know, and when I say tell your story, I don't mean like storytelling, the art of telling a story, which is an important sales skill. We're talking about when someone says, tell me about your business or what do you do, right? How do you answer that? Or you're in a new conversation with a prospect and you're trying to get them intrigued. What do you say? And the most common sins I hear are really the three of them. The first one is that reps are boring and they're not excited about what they're selling. And, you know, in the old days, salespeople were accused of puffery, you know, exaggerating, overstating the claims of what they sell. And today I see the opposite, which is really funny. It's like we're embarrassed to dress up what we do. We don't put a little bow on it and make it pretty. So we understate the value we bring to our clients. Which is, that's sales malpractice. So one, it's boring and it's not compelling. Two, it's confusing. I see salespeople that can't tell their story without like 19 PowerPoint slides or some, you know, intricate, you know, trifold brochure. You should be able to articulate your story 30, 45, 60 seconds. So not boring, not confusing. And then the biggest sin, number three, would be self-focused. Salespeople walking around saying, we do this, we offer, we manufacture, we provide. They lead with their offering, which screams commodity. The first thing when you tell someone we're a supplier or we manufacture or we provide, the very first thing someone thinks when they hear that is, oh, you're a salesperson. The second thing they think is, so what? I've already got a supplier. I've got a provider. Someone already makes that for me. You're not getting anybody's attention by talking about what you do. So we need to stop. This is where I get kind of emotional and emphatic about this. We need to stop talking about what we do and start talking about what we achieve for our clients. No one cares how smart you are or how great you think your offering or your solution or your company is. They only want to know what's in it for them. And that's really the best advice I can give when it comes to structuring the sales story. We've got to lead. The first and most powerful part of our story are the issues that we address for customers and clients. So when I say customer or client issues, I am referring to the pains that we remove, the problems that we solve, maybe the opportunity that we help our clients capture, and maybe most important, the results that we help our clients achieve. Their pains, problems, opportunities, and results. That's what they're thinking about. That's what's keeping them up at night. That's what their goals are based on. So when we talk about those things first in our story, we get in, we get their attention, they put their guard down, you know, we intrigue them, it sets us up to ask probing questions. I could go on and on and on. So my biggest coaching, without, you know, getting into a whole session here, is stop talking about what you do and start leading with what you achieve for clients, their issues. And then after you do that, you can tell them why you're better and different than the other alternatives. But always, always, always lead with the issues you address. That's how you get someone's attention and set yourself apart.
I appreciate you touching on the topic. The only thing I can add to that is this topic right here is, as far as I'm concerned, the number one reason to go get Mike's book. I agree that, and I'm willing to admit, I get my story wrong. It's easy to want to get into talking about what we do and, you know, how we do things and how we, what our products and services are. And it's a common trap. Mike's section in this book will help you get that restructured and focus on your clients and what matters to them. So, Mike, unfortunately, we're out of time. I could spend another hour with you at least talking about some of these things, but I want to thank you for joining me today. I also want to give you a minute or two to tell people where they can find you online, the best place to get the book, and I'll provide links to all that in the show notes as well.
Oh, thank you. First of all, Joe, an honor to be with you. Love talking sales with you and what you're doing in your space. And I'm going to reiterate my invitation. I'd love you to write about your philosophy on targeting and how folks could be spending their time.
I'd love to do it.
Yeah. I'm very active on Twitter. You can find me there and follow me at Mike_Weinberg, WEINBERG. So Mike_Weinberg. And I blog at newsalescoach.com. The book, honestly, it's on Amazon. It's in the bookstores. Amazon's probably your best deal. And thanks for the opportunity to share with you today.
Thanks for joining me, Mike. I really appreciate it.